Michigan State University continues efforts to address sexual assault on campus. The issue is staying in the news because of Thursday's announcement of allegations of sexual assault by members of the MSU football team. Here to discuss that story and others that he's worked on recently at the Lansing City Pulse, Associate Editor Mickey Hurton.
Good morning.
Nice to see you, Mickey.
Good to be here.
We'll make some time here for some of the stories you've worked on recently at the Greater Lansing Business Monthly as well. You and I were planning to talk about the many charges against Dr. Larry Nassar and specifically what those mean for Michigan State, his longtime employer. It turns out MSU has another challenge on its hands now with these allegations of sexual assault by three members of the football team. What do you make of these latest developments?
Well, in a sense, it's probably encouraging that they seem to be taking immediate and forthright action on this. I mean, how deep it goes is really going to be an issue. Our early reporting suggests that it goes deeper on the football team than just this one staff member and these, well, and as far as the staffing goes.
One staff member has been suspended,
and the players have been suspended also. But it may go deeper than that. You know, we have a new county prosecutor who has a record of dealing with sexual issues in a forthright way. Mm. So it could go deeper, and the charges could be taken a little more seriously and aggressively than happened with Stuart Dunnings. We will see on that. But here's the thing that we're looking at. I mean, the university has taken immediate and forthright action in this, which some would say contrasts greatly with how they've acted in the past. I mean, these Nassar issues have sort of amplified what's been a feeling among some that the university has not taken as seriously the question of sexual assault and sexual harassment as it might have. And I mean, there's some, when you look at the suits that are facing, that are involving Nassar and that MSU is a part of, you see actions here that you really sort of, you find rather appalling. If you look at the charges that are made, and we have to understand, Mark, that these are charges and allegations at this point. But it's, you're hard-pressed to think that people, that women who say they've been assaulted would make up these charges. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that can be pleasant for anyone to relive or retell.
There was a recent battle of the op-eds in the Lansing State Journal, one from an ASMSU student leader, that took Michigan State to task for the very thing that you're talking about, inadequate responses to sexual assault and harassment. Now, Jessica Norris, who runs MSU's Title IX office and who's been on Current State more than once in the past, cried foul, pointing to a number of reforms and improvements like the formation of the Office of Institutional Equity. More victims, apparently, are coming forward, streamlined adjudication processes. Where does the dust settle on that right now? To what extent does MSU deserve any credit here for the reforms they've already made?
Well, clearly they deserve credit, but are they getting credit for things they should have done earlier and before? I mean, if you read the Nassar charges, these have been, you know, resonating in the university since, you know, before 2000. And then you look at things, the gymnastic coach telling one of the players, oh, you better not, you have some risk by bringing these forward. You have charges or allegations again that attorneys had told people students wanting to bring charges forward that they should first speak to them and not speak to police. It all has a very Penn State Baylor quality to it. And the university seems to be playing catch up, each week. I mean, a new series of charges drip out and allegations.
The problem seems to be growing faster than the measures taken to address them.
Right. And some of that, you know, you can't dismiss your history. But in retrospect, it does look as if the university hasn't taken things seriously. We've talked to people, students who have been involved in the student judiciary process, and have talked about how long it has taken the university to deal with complaints. So, for example, a woman makes a complaint about a sexual assault 3 weeks before she can even get a hearing to discuss her charge, then another 3 or 4 weeks before she can even get some counseling. We're reporting on this story in our Wednesday, in our upcoming edition of City Pulse. And it's that sort of thing that sort of, you know, diminishes the university's long-term credibility.
We're seeing universities, not just Michigan State, get taken to task by victims of sexual assault, but also by people who are the alleged perpetrators of those assaults. Men have complained that they're not getting due process. It's raised a lot of questions about due process, the way things are arranged right now. And some critics say this all belongs in the legal system, that universities are not really equipped to adjudicate these really challenging cases. Do they have a point?
Well, I think they do have a point. I mean, look, we have essentially a city here. You have, what, 48, 50,000 students, you know, 10,000 or so staff members. I mean, problems will happen. There will be instances of sexual abuse, sexual harassment. These are inevitable. And how you adjudicate some of these, you have to give the university the benefit of the doubt. And some that, you know, some of them are he said, she said allegations. There is no absolute truth. So it is difficult. But you have to, and that's the problem. If you want to run the university, you got to deal with this as the issue. The question really is, has the university always been aggressive in dealing with these, or has it allowed the bureaucracy to sort of handle them as bureaucratic issues? And we will get to them as we get to them. But as to the other point, yes, I mean, where you draw the line and how you allow justice to proceed on charges that are very difficult to prove. It is hard, and you can make mistakes on the other side. You can penalize, you know, those charged who may in fact be innocent. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, but the university just needs to make sure that it is very aggressive and fair and quick in dealing with these.
You were, I think, the City Pulse may have been one of the first outlets to report on the John Madden situation, the texting situation, which is in a different, really, league, but he took some hits over that.
Well, there you go.
That doesn't help the situation.
None of it helps the situation. It all piles on. I mean, you might see Kelly Rossman, you know, PR expert here in town. I mean, she said it was a 1 out of 12, you know, set of grievances, and it was somewhat minor. But then, nonetheless, you know, he did get his promotion to full professor, and he did get his raise. And again, it colors the university and suggests that, yes, well, we see these things, but we quickly revert to business as usual.
Mickey Hurton, associate editor for the Lansing City Pulse and a writer for the Greater Lansing Business Monthly, is our guest here on Current State on WKAR. The City Pulse has written for a while on the competition that Mayor Virge Bernero could have this year if he wants to be reelected another term as mayor. And the two names that get the lion's share of the ink here have been for a while now, State Rep Andy Shore and City Council's Judy Brown Clark. What's the scuttlebutt as we sit here today?
Well, you know, I try not to look too deeply into it, but there does seem to be a sense of ferment in the city right now. And, you know, not to, you know, kill the analogy, but I mean, you know, Trump is president because of a sense of ferment. You know, Bernero's been mayor for 12 years. And he's not the easiest guy to get along with. You know, I mean, he's done some tremendous things for the city, but he also makes a lot of enemies and goes out of his way to make enemies. There is a measure of Bernero fatigue. It certainly among businesses, certainly among the sort of the civic-minded folks in the town. And all of a sudden, challengers have emerged. You know, Andy Shore is a successful politician in the region. And Judy Brown Clark is a city council member with a reasonable pedigree, that they are beginning to that they are considering challenging Bernero for the mayor's seat is really significant, and they're real opponents. I mean, you know, Bernero has faced some rather lackadaisical candidates in the past. But we're seeing this, and it complementing this is some of the changes that are happening. You know, the people who are also seeking city council seats. You know, we had a story last week about Jim DeLine. city auditor. Now, this is not a natural politician. This guy's an accountant. But he's looking at this, and he's saying, I can really make a contribution here. I can go out, and I can challenge Tina Houghton, and I can bring some real meaning and some real expertise to the city. And these kinds of things, I think they're really, you know, they represent a new level, we think, of people looking for city councilees. Peter Spadafore, you know, former president of the, you know, Lansing School Board. Well, this is another serious candidate. And seeing these kinds of people, in a sense, reflects the sort of a groundswell, I think, of interest in making Lansing better, and sort of saying the status quo. We don't want to see the same old gang of political operatives year after year after year, and I think that's pretty good. Now, Bernero is a very powerful mayor, and he's going to have a ton of money. And, you know, I think one is hard-pressed not to pick Bernero in a street fight, because that's where, you know, he's pretty good at that. But these are candidates who will get good support, will be able to raise money, and will probably be able to, you know, help the city advance its mission. Because there were some serious challenges there. You know, you look at the unfunded liabilities. And I think issues like, you know, the sale of BWL, you know, will be significant issues. And Bonero's also vulnerable still on the whole McIntyre issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's still unexplained. And we had a piece the other day that it was based on a claim made against the city. And they've tried to sort of, you know, walk back as the... on that.
Just to be clear, though, I mean, Judy Brown Clark nor Andy Shore have formally declared their candidacy.
No, they haven't. We expect, yes, that's, and yes, but we expect certainly Andy Shore to, and Clark is still considering it.
Well, Judy Brown Clark has posted on Facebook that she's holding a fundraiser. doesn't say for what, but that is coming up on the 23rd. In the less than a minute we have time left here, I'm going to ask you to summarize this. You looked into the real estate landscape in and around Lansing recently for the Greater Lansing Business Monthly. Just briefly describe what you found.
All right, here we go. Unit sales are up about 6% year over year. The volume sold is up 8%. Average prices are up. Available listings are down. The real estate market is recovering. It may not be back to where it was before the Great Recession, but I think, look, real estate represents many people's primary asset, mm-hmm. and that it's recovering, that our unemployment rate is, you know, particularly low right now. There are jobs. It's a really good indicator of people's wealth and their ability to sort of recover and feel good about what they're doing. I mean, when the house is underwater, you know, you are really stuck.
There's nothing good to feel about that.
So that was a good story. And it was sort of, we did also looked at industrial real estate, and it was pretty much the same.
His byline appears in the Greater Lansing Business Monthly, as well as the Lansing City Pulse, where he serves as associate editor as well. Mickey Hurton, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.